Welcome to the Simon Parkes Connecting Consciousness Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen or call in on 0141 356 4141. Call in on 0141 356 4141. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yes, you are indeed listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. This is JP. We are live. This is 11 a.m. PST on the 1st of the 11th, 2015. Lots of ones just now. So we're going to have lots of first-rate questions, questions about the one. I'm sure we have. And we've got 47 questions in before the show has started. It doesn't look likely that if you ask a question from this point onwards, you know, it's going to get answered because, like, 47 questions is about 3 shows worth. Anyhow, let us welcome today's host, Simon Parkes. Good afternoon. How are you, my friend?
Hello, JP. Good evening, and good evening to everyone who's listening. It's been a very busy time, hasn't it? I've just literally come back from holiday, went down to Dorset to collect some fossils. And I'm actually halfway. I'm in a halfway house between Dorset and my home because I would have never made it back for the radio show.
Oh wow! Well, thank you very much for making the effort there, Simon. So you're in somewhere in the Midlands.
Correct. Wow. Well done. You've been remote viewing me again, haven't you, JP?
I'm just seeing the M5 and I was going to say Colchester. That's in Ipswich, anyway. So I'm not going to bother with that. First of all, let's introduce ourselves as humans. How are you? And you've had a good holiday, and you're all sort of back and refreshed and everything.
Well, the big moment for me was the Connecting Consciousness get together that we had just a week ago. That was really great. We had 98 people attend.
Wow.
And it was quite revolutionary because I actually announced to everybody how much it cost to put the conference on. And so everyone was very transparent. So it was something like I only charged £15 a head, and for £15 people got lunch included and tea, coffee, biscuits in the morning and tea, coffee, biscuits in the afternoon. And it cost 1,400 to put on, and we got 1,500 in. So I wanted to really show that that you can run something, not on a shoestring, but you can run it pretty, pretty tight. And it's not about making a profit. It's not about making money. It's about actually showing to people exactly how much they've paid and how much has gone out. So that was how we kicked off the day.
Excellent.
We had somebody give us a really good talk on crystals, crystal healing, other forms of healing and nutrition, EFT. And then we had Wynne Keach do a talk which went down incredibly well. That was the guy that I, on my first show with you, JP, I brought him on. But
yes,
I gave him an hour and a half. Because he needs that sort of length of time to get into his stride, and it really went down incredibly well. So then afterwards, we were supposed to finish at 5. We didn't finish on time. The venue let us go on till 7 in the evening at no extra charge, which is very grateful, and that's Sneaton Castle Management Centre, so thank you very much to them. And then in the evening, we shot down to a local pub, restaurant, and got about 50 of us in there and had an evening meal. So it was nice because I had people come from nearly all over the world, America, Canada, Australia, I think someone came from Hong Kong, and European countries, just for one day. So great success, very lovely. The environment, the energies in that room were absolutely wonderful. People could talk about anything they wanted without being judged. No judgmental conversation, no judgmental comments. Everyone was accepted for who and what they were. So delighted. And then after that, it was quite draining. That's why I took the holiday. I had 4 or 5 days after that away because I knew I needed it. So from a personal perspective, I'm very happy. That's the crowning end to this year. So there we are. That's where we are. And then there's lots to talk about. So do we want to kick off on the questions, JP, and then I can introduce sort of happenings that are occurring sort of, you know, as we speak.
Excellent, excellent. So let's start off with a great name. Incorrigible Missy sends us a question in, first question. What effect do you believe leaving the EU may have on the wider picture? Do you feel a Brexit result will be honoured?
I don't believe that the public will vote for an exit, simply because, well, I'll give you the pattern. It will look like there's going to be a huge vote to leave Europe, and then just about 1 week beforehand, there will be comments made that the money in people's bank accounts could be halved, there'll be loss of jobs, etc., 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 and then people will panic and say, you know, oh, I've got, say, £500 or £1,000 in the bank, can't afford to lose that, so I'll vote to stay in the European Union. And this is the tried and trusted method that the establishment use. So I have absolutely no doubt that we won't leave the European Union, because the mass media will run a scare campaign, just as they did when actually Scotland had the chance to vote to leave Great Britain, and it looked like they were going to. Then all the big corporations said 1 week or 2 weeks before the vote, look, if you vote to go from the United Kingdom, we are going to pull out our operations. And one of them was a big bank that even said it wouldn't have any branches in Scotland. So the corporations and the mass media will ensure that Britain doesn't vote, because people will be concerned about their bank account. But I'll answer the question as if it could happen, which I don't believe it will for a moment. But if it did happen, yes, it would have to be honoured, simply because the public had spoken. But what the Conservative government would do would be to say, there's been a change in the agreements, and we're going to have another referendum in 3 months or 6 months' time. So they would try to bring it back to have another vote. So it ain't going to happen. End of story.
Okay, so from British politics to extra dimensional. From Max of Steel, Simon, what is the best way to contact an ET or an extra dimensional creature if we feel ready to do so? Thank you.
It's an incredibly interesting question. It's a really good question. The sad thing, perhaps, is that, or good thing, depending how you look at it, is that if you have not had any contact, it's very unlikely that you would be able to open a channel and they would respond to that. Now, there are many people who profess to having had no experience, but actually they have, and they just haven't yet remembered it. And there are plenty of people who haven't had that experience. In fact, the vast majority of people obviously have not had an experience. But if you have some connection, then the best thing to do really is to get yourself onto a quiet spot, a hill, not a forest, onto a hill where you can have a good vision of a night sky, and you need a clear night. And then you've just got to, in your mind, say, I'm ready to see you. I wish to see you. Please show yourself as a sign that you really do exist, or as a sign that you know, you are prepared to communicate with me. And if it's meant to be, you will see an alien spacecraft. And you always know the difference between an alien spacecraft and a satellite, because when a satellite travels in space, it is just a white dot, a glowing dot that moves in a straight line. But an alien spacecraft will move in a skipping motion, and since the 1940s, it's been described as if you were to skip flat pebbles across an ocean. So it's a skipping movement because it's using the gravitational fields. So if you get that in response to your point, then you have a very good beginning to start to develop that communication.
Excellent. Now, I said I wouldn't ask multiple questions from a person.
It's not a flat Earth question.
No. This is another question from Max, but it's a brilliant question, and I think it's really pertinent. So, here's his question. I've always been able to tell when someone had something to tell but didn't do it. People have a hard time lying to me and often tell me a lot about their life. But now I feel like the whole world is crying out to get heard by someone or something. I can feel it in the air, on the net, and by speaking with others. Do you think it can have a link with the humankind consciousness awakening? Thank you for your devotion.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for...
See, that's a great question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I just want to thank him for recognizing... people think that it's... No, that's not true. Some people think that it's a laugh doing what I do. It really isn't. And so when people perhaps recognize that it's a little bit more demanding than just sort of, doing a radio show or doing a conference, there's a lot more that goes on in the side. So when someone recognizes that, then I'm really grateful because, you know, then they've identified that there's a lot of hard work here. Yes, the answer is yes. Human consciousness realizes that there's a void, a vacuum, developing now because of what's happened over the last 3 weeks. Human consciousness for a long time now has realized that it's on a hiding to nothing with the system that we have, and so it wants a new way forward. It's not necessarily calling out for an individual or a group of individuals. What it's actually calling out for, I believe, is a new perspective, a new way forward, a new value-based system where, on a practical level, a bank lends you money and only charges you 1% interest. We're talking about a fundamental change to the way that humans do business on this planet. And I think that human consciousness is now saying that we no longer wish to be associated with the old way. It's corrupt. It doesn't work. It doesn't serve the majority. It only serves the small minority. And human consciousness now is expressing itself in a way that elite governments are struggling to contain. It's very difficult. I've said this before. It's very difficult now for an elite government to lie to its electorate. It can't lie to its citizenry as it used to. So it's a good question. He's absolutely right. The change is coming, and human consciousness is now unstoppable.
Yeah. One corollary of that is I've had a lot more people coming to me with their traumas arising from their past, you know, from their, you know, personal lives. And many people seem to be very, very short-tempered, and people have been blowing off. I mean, we've had shows, not on this station, but on other stations, where the hosts have just on air exploded at each other. You know, just had a bust up, a real bust up on the air in front of hundreds of thousands of people. It's quite an intense time. Is this all to do with it? Is this the war, really? This is the war going on inside us, isn't it?
Two things. On a more practical level, it's actually the reduction of time. We still have the same amount of work or tasks to do, but in real terms, the amount of physical time we have is reducing dramatically. Even people who are not awake are saying more and more, well, I haven't got enough hours in a day, or I can't seem to get done what I used to get done. And that's not just somebody looking back through rose-tinted glasses at the good old days. We are actually in a situation where we are losing minutes a year, and we have done for a few years now. And it's now come to the point where people are becoming stressed because they don't quite know, they can't put the finger on it, but they're not achieving the amount of work that they normally do. You wake up in the morning and before you know it, it's dark. And this is a real change, because as the planet changes and as our understanding of time begins to change, remember, we have a very, very inaccurate understanding of time and space, and as that is confronted by the reality of the change around us, so we can go through that. Now, that can cause a lot of stress, but you're asking a deeper question, or you're posing the deeper point, which is individuals now are having to face decisions that they have made over many lifetimes. And when in a debate situation with somebody who has a different type of soul to them, then old frustrations can rise up, not only with that other person, but with themselves, right through from a feeling of guilt, which obviously we know we need to let go, but nevertheless that rises up, and anger, and also frustration that the vision that a person has may not be the vision that another person has. And so instead of just a general debate, it becomes quite personal and aggressive. And it is because the earth is changing, we're running out of time, and I totally agree with you that it's an internal thing.
Amazing, because actually this is something I said to my girlfriend the other day, is that I only get angry when I'm pushed for time, when I've got too many things to do in the time allowed, and somebody's trying to push their time in. That's when I get angry with people. Anyhow, so less about me. Dear Simon, if we are all from Source and our true home is not on this planet, then would it be offensive to ask an alien race to give us a tour of the universe and let us in on some knowledge that we're normally supposed to not know, like what they did with you, or did they have a specific reason for bringing you in? So it's interesting that he says alien race when he's saying, you know, that basically they brought us in. So it's like the alien race is your race. This is what you were saying before, wasn't it?
Yeah. There's a bit of validity in that question, actually. I quite like the question. On first reading, it doesn't seem to make sense, but actually when you look into it, it does. The problem that we have at the moment is that we don't have the full picture, and so we can't really make decisions based on that. But if we were to access a library, not necessarily Akashic Records, but if we were able to access a bank of knowledge to give us a much more broader overview of which alien races and where they are and what they've done, then we would have a sort of a speeded up way of getting to full knowledge on something. The difficulty is that we need to be able to trust the information that we're given. Now, we know we can trust Source, because Source is a divine energy and wouldn't lie to us. But Source doesn't necessarily operate through computer screens and data memory banks, whereas perhaps another alien race does. So it would be about being absolutely 100% certain that we could trust whoever was offering us that information, so that we could then accept that information as accurate, and then again we would have a look at that and share that. So all creatures, all living things made from Source are good, but then we choose what we do. So, you know, we choose to manifest ourselves either in a Palladian body or a Lyran body or a Sirian body or a Reptilian body, whatever that might be. And then we take on all the energy signatures of that particular race and any karma that goes with that. So in other words, we all start pure, but through our experiences, through our decisions and our choices, we take on that signature. So we are all divine, but some of us have gone off the path, and this choice on this planet is about deciding whether we stay on a path or whether we go back to it or whatever we do. So I totally understand the question. I think it's a very good point. I think we just have to be very, very careful who we ask for that information.
Yes, yes. It's like, you know, whose information is correct, because everybody's got these different stories. So meanwhile, now this is from, I love this name, Kitty Kubiak. Dear Simon, Harold Harold Kautzweller has done wonderful work on exposing the true nature of chemtrails, mind control, and social engineering. But most importantly, that we have the ability to overcome all of this with love and positive mindset. Maybe I shouldn't be really... Anyway, he says, Cara St. Louis posted that he's been taken over by a dark entity. Do you know anything about this? And is he okay? Much love, Elaine. So it's, you know, it's a question about whether people have been taken over by dark entities. And, I mean, that seems to... There's a lot of that going around in there as well, isn't there? You know, so-and-so's been taken over. So-and-so's over on the dark side.
I'm aware of Harold, and to my knowledge he was a good person, and because he's a scientist, he's an establishment scientist, let's just make that absolutely clear, and very rare for established scientists to cross over the boundary and come and join us, and because of that he was attacked, no question of that. The information that he gave, particularly on Magellan's disease, and I would suggest that everybody tries to look on that. That's absolutely phenomenal. And it was that presentation on Magellan's and the fourth dimensional entity that's associated with it that led to him being attacked. So he's a good person with absolutely good information who's been got at. And that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, that's the thing, is everybody, you know, put your head above the parapet and you get hammered down. That's an old Japanese phrase, isn't it? Anywho, now here's some, there's been a few questions popping up about this and maybe we can cover them all. This is a question about densities stroke dimensions. Okay. All right, so this is from Ines. Hello, Simon. Can you share your knowledge about the rules of densities or dimensions? On one hand, there are frequency borders, portals between them. Long way to develop through. And on the other hand, they exist simultaneously independent from time and space. And we by ourselves carry all this in us.
Yes.
For example, a higher density through pure joy, deep love in the middle of our 3D world. and then the question ends. So let me just see if I can find it, because there's a couple more about dimensions and densities and what we can talk about them, unless you want to jump in right now. Oh, here we go.
I'll just try and make something of that. Yeah. I understand.
I've got another one. I found the other part, which is all this talk about fourth dimension, fifth dimension, 12th dimension. Hold on, what about first and second? And if we're living in the third, why isn't our third strand of DNA material here? So, yeah, there's various other nuggets that can be added to that. So, yeah, dimensions, Simon.
Well, let's just start with the question first. The person's asking, why hasn't we got a third strand of DNA? We mustn't just think of a strand of DNA as a dimensional link. So just if you have a fourth strand of DNA, that doesn't mean that it's associated with a fourth dimension, or the ninth strand of DNA is associated with a ninth dimension. We associate these strands of DNA with star families, with those off-planet humanoids or human-type creatures who had a hand in the human race. We don't have third strand of DNA because it was taken from us at about 220,000 years ago by a reptilian force on this planet that just left all modern humans with two physical strands, so we were intelligent enough to work for them, but not clever enough to see through the veil. And you've only got to walk onto your high street or your town or your city and see that it holds true today. The vast majority of people don't see through the veil. They have other things to worry about. It's only those people that have connected more strands of DNA who have been able to see through the veil. So quickly about dimensions and densities. There are portals that run from one dimension through other dimensions, and they have an entry and an exit point. Some just stay in the same dimension, some cross through different dimensions. Basically, the higher you go, the faster the sound waves and the light waves are beating, and your physical body becomes less organic. I don't like the word dense, because material all has to go somewhere. But basically, you become more light wave and sound wave created and less organic. So but when you're in, this is the tricky bit, when you're actually in the fifth dimension, you feel pretty solid. But when someone in the fifth dimension is observed by someone in the third dimension, they would have an aura, a glowing aura around them, other than your normal aura. And then once you cross that magic boundary between the sixth and seventh dimension, then you clearly become less organic and begin to take on what the New Age would refer to as a light body. So someone in our dimension, third dimension, looking at a ninth dimensional being would perceive them as just a golden, glowing, yellowy white light. But in their own dimension, they would see themselves as more physical. So it's a perception from another dimension as your third dimensional brain and third dimensional organic body tries to make sense of something that is less organic, but is much more energy based. But it's a good question, and the person who wrote that question did have a very good knowledge and understanding. I just think that they could perhaps write the question a little bit more clearer, but I understand what they're saying.
Okay, so Bog Bubble, he's being very JP's awesome, Simon's awesome, JP and Pablo, really, he hearts husky dogs. Anyway, humans exist in 1, 2, and 3. He gets confused by talk of vibration with regard to dimensions. I learned the dimensions after the third are curled up like a Calabi-Yau manifold. I don't know what that is, but it's a kind of curly thing. How do entities live in a higher dimension without also existing in the dimensions below it? Yeah, exactly. So if a fourth dimensional person is living in my room, would I know about it?
You would if they came through into full physicality. That's how the Roswell spacecraft is very real and physical, because they materialized into the third dimension. You see, that works in quite nicely with previous answer I've given. Once you leave the sixth dimension, your physical body becomes much more energy based. So a fourth dimensional or a fifth dimensional entity appearing on Earth will appear physical and be physical, because they are only... The only difference between ourselves and the fourth and fifth dimension is the time and space angle. They'll still be physical. So when the Roswell spacecraft bodies were collected, they were physical. Absolutely, they were physical. But if somebody from the ninth or tenth dimension crashed, that would pose a very, very, very real issue, because the bodies wouldn't be that way inclined. How do these creatures remember that when whatever your dimension, however you are existing, it's normal to you? So people from the fifth or the sixth dimension looking at us would think, well, how can they exist in that? It must be really difficult. You know, it's quite dense and quite heavy. It must be very difficult. But to us, it's what we're used to, so we can cope with it. So remember that we have to look at it from their perspective, and to them it's perfectly normal.
So, for instance, they would... we would look down on a cliff into the sea, and we'd see these creatures down there, and they would all be adapted to high pressure, and we're looking down on them and saying, how can they cope with all that pressure? That's the same sort of idea, is it?
Yes, but we would also say, how do they communicate? How do they understand? Their world is very small. They don't know what's happening on the cliff here. You know, shall we throw a rock down into the water? Shall we put a microphone down into the water? How shall we communicate with them? How shall we show them that we're here? Oh, and if we do show them we're here, what will they think of it? So that's how a creature from another dimension views something from a lower dimension. Now, if you are ethical, you say, I'll leave them alone and wait for them to evolve and come and find me. But if you're not ethical, you say, how can I interfere in that world? And so, you know, that's what goes on. Now, creatures in the fourth dimension continually interfering in this world, but those from the higher dimensions don't like to interfere too much, because they have evolved to a certain point where they respect the knowledge base or the emotional or the spiritual base at which we're at. And what they're trying to do, the higher dimensions, is to speed up our spiritual development so that they can show themselves to us on a much wider platform than they are at the moment, and that people will accept them and embrace them and share. And of course, then, you know, that completely does away with the need for elite governments. So yeah, that's where we stand with it. I hope that answers it.
That does. I'm bursting to ask about the CERN question, but I'm sure that will come up later, so I'll ask Phil. Here we go. From Shake Up. The ostensive future benefit of implant stroke chip technology is being introduced now. Various applications, health, security being developed and marketed to make us believe it's a good thing, even saving lives. Can you please explain the physical consequences and social damage this will do to humanity if we accept these implants into our bodies? Are enough people awake to see the bigger agenda being attempted here?
That's a very good question. Potential benefits, such as if I lose my 3-year-old child and they have a chip in their arm, then the police will be able to identify them like you would a dog or a cat and bring them back. The other possibility is that I have a chip in my hand and I can open my garage doors without leaving my front door, or I can turn my TV on, my lights on. All of these are used as lies, as a method to trick people into having some form of electronic tag, which then means that the state controls you. In other words, at the moment, it's quite legal for you to participate in a demonstration generally. So supposing you go and demonstrate and you say, how can 12 rich families or 6 rich families in the world control 90% of all the resources and everyone's left poor? And you go and demonstrate and you say that, and then suddenly you find that your bank account has been encoded onto this chip. And you know that because you've gone to the shops every day and bought something, and you don't put your debit card or your mobile cell phone, you just put your hand, because that's got the chip on it, and you put your hand on the reader and that debits your bank account. Well, the elite can just turn your bank account off. You have no access to any money. And they say to you, tell you what, you behave yourself and be a good person and don't go on any more demonstrations, and we'll turn your bank account back on again. That is the whole principle of the chipping, because 25 years ago there was big talk about wiping out 3/4 of the Earth's population. Then technology brought them another method to control the population, and that is through chipping. So that's one aspect of chipping. Now that is the larger microchip. But the other chipping is the injectable chips, the nano chips. That's a completely different kettle of fish. So we've already seen adverts on television in America 2, 3, 4 years ago, with actors telling everybody to get chipped because it was really good. There's a law in America which has not been enacted, which is every newborn baby in America is supposed to be microchipped. Now that law has been passed but hasn't been acted. We know that in Australia from January of next year, all old age pensioners, that's senior citizens, who wish to claim senior citizen pension money have to be inoculated. We also know that from January of next year, any person who has lost their job and wishes to get social security payments has to be inoculated. So we need to ask ourselves, why does the system in Australia, why does the government wish to inoculate people? And it can only be because they wish to put something into their bloodstream. So yes, I think a lot of people will start to question. I'm an old age pensioner in Australia. I get my $100 or $250, whatever it is. Why do you want to inject me so that I can claim my money? And I think that a lot of people are going to start to realize that some very nasty evil at work is planned for them. And I don't think people are going to just roll over and say, please kick me. I think people are going to say, I'm not having any of this. So we're beginning to see that now. I think the public are not stupid. I think the vast majority of the public are becoming aware that they cannot trust the vast majority, not everybody, the vast majority of governments, and certainly that there within each government is an elite group who are psychopaths, absolute psychopaths.
So we'll come back to the fourth dimensional Fourth Reich in a minute. Not very long. We have a question from Christian 92. Dear Simon Parks, when our organic body dies and our soul comes out of the body, is there anything we can do to avoid getting caught by the reptilian energy web that surrounds the Earth? And let's say somehow we manage to get through it. Where do we go next? Is it reptilian? Who put this web there? And can you talk about the web, how to get out of it, and what is it and stuff?
Right. You, in order to have a very good chance of breaking through this web, you have to be practicing now, because if you don't, what will happen is when your organic body gives up and your soul is liberated from that body, you've had no training and you will just possibly be ended up recycled back again. So what I say to people is that every morning, or certainly every evening before you go to bed, the last thing you should say to yourself every night before you go to bed is, and you decide where you want to go. If you have worked out what your home planet is, your star family, let's say that you're Lyran, and you have a Lyran energy, you can either say, I wish to return to Lyra, be with the family, or you can say, I wish to go back to Source. And if you say that every night, it's a little bit like when I was a kid at school, in the old days of being taught, you used to have to stand at the front of the class and, you know, once times three is three, two threes are six, three threes are nine. You had to learn it by rote. Well, it's a way of programming your mind. And if you program your mind every night, the last thing you think about is, I want to go back to Source, or I want to go back to your star family. When that physical body dies, you don't actually switch off. Because your soul lives forever, you will still think. This is the bit that's very hard to get across to people. You will still be thinking, but you won't be able to move your body, because your body will be still. And you will have no connection with that body any longer, because it isn't alive, therefore you can't animate it. Your agreement with that physical body is gone, and you will then need to leave that physical body to find another. And the first thing you're going to think about is what you've said to yourself over the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years. I want to go back to Source. I want to go back to Lyra, or wherever it is. And that means that when an agent of the enemy comes to you and pretends to be Jesus Christ or Archangel Michael, and, you know, I often say to people who are convinced that Archangel Michael is going to come and collect them and take them to wherever, and I'm not meaning to be rude, but I say to them, don't you think Archangel Michael is incredibly busy? Do you think he can take time out of his busy schedule just to come and collect and take you away? And I'm doing it really seriously, because I want them to question and to think about it. And these are holograms. These are like the Matrix. These are glitches. These are things put in there to take you and to trick you and to get you back into the system. So if you say, no, I don't want Archangel Michael, I don't want Jesus Christ, I want to go back to Source. And if you keep on with that, only two things can happen. You either are successful and you make it through, or you get worn down and you think, ugh, do you know what, I can't be bothered, I can't do it any longer, and you end up being recycled. Now, I've got some news on the web. I'm sure our listeners, and ultimately your listeners, JP, because it's obviously your show and you've been doing so much good work with these people, that they know that Saturn has rings around it which are not made of ice but are made of crystal, and this is one giant aerial, and this is the actual station that provides the frequency to maintain the energy net around the Earth. But it required a booster station which was placed on the moon. Technically it's called the far side, but we always call it the dark side of the moon. This was a booster station. Now that booster station has been turned off. I don't know at this stage whether it's sabotage or whether it has been turned off by the people who controlled it. The web, the energy web now, is weak. in certain areas, and it's been turned off deliberately to allow certain entities to leave this planet. Perhaps we can get onto that later, but basically, if you are a very, very powerful soul, you have a very good chance now of getting out. But if you haven't had the training, then you do need to practice what I've just said. So I'm sorry for the long answer there, JP, but I think it's an important
question.
No,
that was an excellent answer. That's information that I've not heard before, and I'm sure lots of others haven't heard before, and it's a little nugget. Maybe somebody could clip that nugget out and put it on the YouTube straight away. Anywho, while we move forward, hang on, I'm pasting at the end of the file. Now, here we have... So I'm going to go back to the file, the beginning of the file when I had the questions. Right, here we go. Right, now, back to Simon. This is from Lyra. The question is called Lyra. Simon, is there a group of beings beyond the Illuminati in the Kuiper Belt, which actually is the Fourth Reich? If so, then is this the group keeping the planet from folding in on itself, blocking CERN, as well as keeping the banking systems going, so as to rid the Earth of the Illuminati, so they, the Kuiper Belt group, can actually come in and take over where Hitler left off? So are there Nazis in the Kuiper Belt, in Antarctica, on the dark side of the moon, underground in Argentina, underground in Finland, underground in South Africa? You know, where aren't the Nazis?
Well, most of them in America, apparently. The film Iron Sky, when that film came out, was banned in Britain. And it was shown on a niche cinema. It was supposed to be there for a week, and it was only shown for one day. However, because of the world has no boundaries now, and you can buy things in Australia, Canada, etc., etc., you can't maintain a ban, so they had to break the ban. And the film Iron Sky showed that suggested that at the end of the Second World War, the Germans had alien flying saucer technology and were able to base themselves on the moon. And there's no smoke without fire. So what we've got is a group of off-world entities who we would call Aldebaran. And the Aldebaran group were the disarticulated energies that spoke with the Viril Society and the Thrule Society in Germany prior to the Second World War. Both actually were channeled by women, very gifted psychic women, and they had a connection to the SS and through the SS to Adolf Hitler. And it's no coincidence that some of the early attempts at making a flying saucer, what they refer to as the Viril power. So we have Aldebaran group, and it's interesting that somebody who I worked with some years ago drew a representative of the Aldebaran group. Very interesting, neither boy nor girl, so you couldn't actually tell whether they were male or female. Very interesting creatures. Their writing is very Sumerian. When the Viril Society and the Thrule Society were channeling it, and they did some automatic writing, it looked very Sumerian. So we're beginning to see some sort of link with the reptilian faction, although it is a separate faction and has connections with the Anunnaki. We mustn't get confused with what we would call the Fourth Reich in terms of corporations. A lot of German technology, German thinking, German ideals made it into the corporations of America. It was the Germans who gave the idea of deep underground military bases to the Americans. It was the idea of compartmentalization within secret projects so that one person didn't know what the other one was thinking. That came from Germany. In fact, it started in the mid-1930s when the Fritz rocket, it was the very first air-to-air, air-to-ground missile that was radio-controlled and then actually with a CCTV camera-controlled. So it's a real smart bomb that was developed before 1940. So the six or seven German companies were working on that, and to prevent employees of one company talking to employees of another company, they created the compartmentalization, which then the Americans took on board. So we've got a huge amount of German influence. Think about IBM, think about Siemens, think about Hugo Boss. Hugo Boss on many, many very expensive high-end high streets selling designer suits. Hugo Boss made all the uniforms for the SS. And here they are making suits for people who have no idea that the same company made suits for the SS. So we've got the Fourth Reich very well established, but largely in American corporations. But it's all about people's ideals and values. And when human consciousness rises, then we are going to say, can we forgive? If we can forgive, then we forget and we get on with it. If we can't forgive because someone's got blood on their hands, then we have to do something about it. So I think it's about actually saying, where do you draw the line? Because just because somebody is the great-great-great-grandson of somebody, that doesn't mean that they're inherently bad. But if they are doing evil deeds themselves and they're signing their name on pieces of paper and they're very well aware of what they're doing, well, they should have no part in a new earth, in a new world. And I think that as the energies of the earth change, and we talked about vibrationals just a little bit ago, as those vibrational rates increase, so we will become very, you know, aware of these people whose vibrational rate is definitely out of step with ours. And when we talk to them, we'll hear that their language and their values are just Stone Age. They're just not what we want to hear now. They're not part of our group. And so we will naturally begin to evolve sets of people. Those who are making a change, want a different way of life, and those that want to hang on to the old status quo. And, you know, it's going to have to change. And I've always said it'll be difficult, but it will happen. So it's a good question, and I suppose we could spend more time on it, but we mustn't.
That's right. I mean, you're quite an expert on the Fourth Reich and the Third Reich, certainly with Operation Paperclip and the Nazi and the Vril. And, you know, again, that's a sort of subject of mine, personal subject of mine, about the ability of having flying saucers yes. in 1946. Which yes. turns out actually to be a reality. I've done, yes. you know, as you know, yes. I've done a lot of research on it. So,
JP, you're absolutely right. And I mean, I would actually say that you're one of the foremost experts on this, simply because of the huge amount of evidence that you've read and you've talked to people. And one of the questions, I know you know the answer, but some of the listeners may not. The question I'm often asked is, if Adolf Hitler had flying saucers, why didn't he win the Second World War? And that's a damn good question. And the answer is really simple, is that he did have flying saucers, but he couldn't put weapons on them. They tried to put 20mm, 30mm, 40mm cannon on them, and they found that every time they fired them, it totally destabilized the craft, and they weren't at the point of an energy weapon. They were only literally 6 months away from a type of radio wave energy weapon, which they could have used offensively. The problem they had was they had the ability to fly these craft, they couldn't weaponize them, and that was a problem. And so Himmler and Kepler and a couple of the others said, let's get these spacecraft, these saucers out of Germany. We can't afford to let them fall into the hands unless we're going to do a deal with the Americans. And that was something they did. They actually gave that technology to the Americans, and Adolf Hitler bought his life, basically. He didn't die in the bunker, because the technology was given. And if people doubt that, I would just say that in 1939, a Scottish scientist, just across the border from where I live, had invented microwaves. So it was actually a Scottish gentleman who invented microwaves in 1938-1939, and Winston Churchill was absolutely desperate to get the Americans in on the side of Britain by 1940, and so Churchill gave them all the research on microwave technology, and Roosevelt, I think it was, the president, as a part of a deal to try and bring them in. So America was already positioning itself before they were drawn into the war themselves to obtain as much exotic technology as they could. So when the Fourth Reich, the Third Reich collapsed, there were more, and this is a fact, there were more American intelligence agents out there looking for German scientists than there were for war criminals. You know, and that's really difficult if you are a person who's had your family murdered or killed in some work camp, or, you know, you died fighting for a good cause, to know that the most powerful country in the world at the time wasn't that interested in bringing people to book. It was much more interested in obtaining information that would allow it to be the number one country after the Second World War. So America was already on that road to obtain the information that the Germans had already developed.
Excellent. Well, we'll talk. But here's the thing, is that they did manage to create a weaponized UFO, which then wiped out the American fleet in Operation High Jump with Admiral Byrd several years later in the '50s. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely correct. The point was that in the early stages of 1945, they didn't have an experimental model. It was still on the drawing board. And that's why I mean, had they had 6 months more, they would have, never mind the nuclear bomb, 6 months more, they would have had, you only needed one or two of those craft and you would have turned the whole war around in the air. I'm not sure about the land war, but you would have turned the war around in the air. So that they were only 6 months away from really turning the war around. So I don't think historians actually understand just what a close call it was.
Well, here's the thing, Simon. In my research, it turns out that they were 1 month away from deploying Die Glocke. And what here's the most terrifying thing ever, okay? Nazis with teleportation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Nazis, teleportation and time travel. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so they were 1 month away from being able to deploy a nuclear weapon in Washington with no warning whatsoever.
Now, that's I absolutely agree with you. Many people in the UFO or the alternative side don't grasp this, that the Germans actually had been enriching uranium a long time before anyone else was. What the Germans had studied, had trouble with, was the detonation device, the actual trigger mechanism. It is incredibly difficult to explode a nuclear bomb when you want to. It's, people don't understand that. It's an incredibly difficult piece of equipment you need to do. And they were struggling with that. And they, on one hand, they were looking at what they called the big bomber, that they were going to fly this big jet aircraft over to America and drop a nuclear bomb on it. Then they decided they would put it in a submarine, and then they were looking at they did have the prototype of this, a rocket to be launched from a submarine that was actually under the water, and which then obviously the Allies, the Americans and the British, copied and became Polaris and Poseidon. But it was the Germans who were looking at a nuclear missile delivery system on a submarine under the water. So the Germans, I didn't know it was 1 month. I mean, that's news to me, JP. And because I know you've researched it, I you know, you're absolutely accurate. You must be. But I knew it was close. I knew it was a hair's breadth away. And also, people don't appreciate that the Germans used low-yield nuclear artillery rounds in their battle in 1941 against the Russians towards the Leningrad front. And Stalin, who at that time was sitting on the world's largest stockpile of mustard gas and nerve gas, said to Hitler through, I think, the Swiss embassy, if you continue to use these low dirty bombs, basically through artillery, we will unleash all this chemical weapons, and then you'll have no living space, because the Germans actually wanted land. That was the whole point of what Hitler was after. And basically, Stalin said he would just turn all of that part of Russia into a red-hot toxic waste. And that's what prevented the Germans from deploying any nuclear weapons against Russia, or anywhere else for that matter, on artillery rounds. So it's wrong to think the Germans did not have nuclear technology, because they did. Okay.
Thank you. Right. Okay. So let's go to more cheerful subjects. But yeah, I just wanted to share that with you. So, okay. Here's another one. Simon, what is your experience with the Council of Grandmothers?
That's very interesting. The person must have some knowledge, and every arm of the elite family has a connection through a ceremony or ritual or a blood linkage to a number of females who are entrusted with certain rights and authority. If we're talking about the same grandmothers, obviously, I mean, maybe the questioner has a completely different idea of these grandmothers, but to my knowledge, and grandmothers play an incredibly important role in certain decision making or certain ceremonies, and without them you can't go ahead with the ceremony. I think what's particularly striking is that a new grandmother is chosen and the old grandmother is murdered, and a ceremony is around that. So it's, to my knowledge, if we are talking the same grandmothers, these are witches at the highest level. They are breaking the word up, they are grandmothers. So the mother is the term that we would give to a senior Illuminati female, which we could loosely call a witch, although sometimes they don't like to be called that. And they are the grand, which means that they are the highest rank within the Illuminati female satanic line. And they have a carved out role which doesn't challenge the men, but sometimes can bring them into conflict. Very powerful people, very, very psychic, and very able people, and very knowledgeable. And they play like glue. They hold the organization together. They are the pivotal point which a female, or sometimes a male, would go to for advice, or favors. And they have always exuded a strong charisma. And they have certain jewellery that they wear, certain marks. Being tattooed is not really seen as the right way, but some of the younger witches have begun to tattoo their bodies with emblems which equal their rank. So a grandmother would have a certain emblem on her body, or more likely she would wear jewellery or earrings. If we go back, right back in history to about 572 AD, Emperor Justinian of Constantinople, what was then the Eastern Roman Empire but became Byzantium, his wife, was it Anastasia? Oh, dear me, I can't remember, but it'll come back to me. His wife is portrayed on mosaics wearing exactly the right jewellery for a grandmother. So we know that by the 6th century, it had already penetrated the highest rank of government in the Eastern Roman Empire. So in fact, we're talking the same thing. That's my answer.
Excellent. Excellent. Many, many avenues of exploration opened up, many domains of knowing. Thank you. Okay, now here's a question from Rackmeister, who's a very old listener. Well, he's not that old physically, but yeah, he's been listening along, and he's his own researcher. But this is from his girlfriend. So, here we go. Do you know something about, now this is PRA Computers of Mother Earth? Star Akashic Records from Gdynia, G-D-Y-N-I-A, from North Poland, that Chris Thomas spoke about.
Right, I've got a lot of respect for Chris Thomas. I know Chris Thomas doesn't agree with my take on the mantids, but you know what, the world is big enough for people to agree on 90% and disagree on 10%, and we're not going to fall out on it. Chris Thomas is a very good man and has been attacked because of his sayings. And I always judge that the more you're attacked, then the more right on you must be. I'm aware of crystalline material that can connect with the Akashic records. The problem that I have is that when you use a middleman or an interface between divine source or Akashic records, there's the more you have of this, the more likely it is to be hacked or altered. I would say that some very interesting parts of the world, certainly what we'd call Eastern Europe, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, these countries have some very interesting underground bases where, I don't know if they're still there, but were devices that allowed the operator to access certain histories recorded. And I'm always very, very cautious of using any machine to read any sort of past history. So I am familiar with it. I can't give the questioner the answer she wants, because I think it's a woman that's asked this question. You said it was a girlfriend. Because there are some people or groups or a sect or a society that have set themselves up to access or read this information, and I haven't met any of these people yet, so I can't really pass a comment because I'm aware of them and I don't know what their agenda is. But so I could just say to her, yeah, she's on the right road, she's on the right track. I am aware of it, but I don't know as much as perhaps I should.
Excellent. So, Simon, I need to take a little bathroom. I think everybody does. So I'm going to play a song. This is from my old band. You know, we're playing original music. I thought I'd blow my own trumpet, actually, or play my own guitar. This is my band was called The Mystery School, and this is called In the Beginning.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parkes and his producer, JP. That's me. So meanwhile, we had some interesting question just comes up. You know, what are you looking for? By the way, that was my band from 20 years ago. Maybe I said that before that. But anyway, they were called the Mystery School, and Sarah Dallas on vocals. She's a journalist now. Most of us are journalists. The drummer is a journalist in Luxembourg. The singer is a journalist in New York, I think. And I'm a journalist on the internet. Ish. Not even a journalist. Anyway, I do my own journals. Simon, let's get back to the questions. Right, now, there we go. This is almost an and finally question, but on the other hand, it goes back to the questions we were talking, you know, some things we were talking about last time. We were talking about the character of different ET races. Okay. And so Sonia from Vienna asks, I wonder if there are any rabbit or bunny beings somewhere in the universe. And Marjorie, as I explained before, adding on her own question, she has always wanted to ask forever, Simon, is there a civilization of guinea pig-like beings somewhere in the universe? Now, I know that sounds really trivial, but I believe that, you know, every creature that we see on this planet has a representative of a humanoid somewhere else, that evolved into humans somewhere. That's my opinion. So anyway, the question is, are there rabbit bunny beings or guinea pig beings?
Right, well, I've seen too many unusual, strange things to dismiss anything out of hand. I just wouldn't. And also, I think it's about respecting other people. I was on a radio show with somebody, I won't mention who it was, who basically was saying that his aliens were real and my aliens were not real. And, you know, just because a person hasn't seen something themselves doesn't mean it's not true. So I have never seen anything like that, but that doesn't mean it's not real. So I would keep an open mind on it until it was shown one way or the other. That's my best answer.
Okay, now we've had a little bit of an issue in the chat room there. Somebody's not very happy, but that's because their question hasn't been asked yet. And the reason it hasn't been asked yet is because I'm asking these questions in order. Okay, so now this question is from Vishmalodu. Dear Simon, my question pertains to the controversial M.A. Mansour Armana collection of 28 Egyptian artifacts from the Amara period, which is 1350 BC. The collection resides in a bank vault in Beverly Hills and hidden from public view. The limestone artifacts of the pyramid. Should I go on? Do you know about this?
No, yes, but go on for the listeners.
Okay. Are of the pharaoh Akhenaten and his family. I presume these artifacts are authentic because of the controversy that surrounds them and the family who protects them. So, can you tell us more about who Akhenaten is and where he came from and where he is now and more about his people and why did they try to destroy his legacy now and then?
Akhenaten could claim legitimate connections to the sun god. And the reason that they are... it's a private collection. It's been bought by a private collection, but the money that was raised for that didn't come from one individual. If you are a certain person or personage and you have a huge personal fortune and you have past lives and you can connect with somebody, then you would buy up everything that you could about that person. Also, if certain objects are imbued with magical properties, you would then wish to perhaps have them and control them. And we're looking at a situation where an individual on behalf of an elite group, has funded, part funded to obtain objects which that individual can claim a historic linkage with. Many of these pharaohs were hybrids. They were part human, part something else. And as the pharaoh line diminished, it became less alien and more human. So you always know something's not quite right, because any sovereign government would say, we want our artifacts returned to us. You know, these were taken from some tomb in Egypt. They are Egypt's property. The people of Egypt want it back. But because the elite, who control many, many governments in the world, have the say over everything at the moment, that is never going to happen, because a favoured person within that elite can show a family history back to Atakhenaten, and can basically say, well, you know, I want this, I'm allowed to have it. So I'm aware of the objects. The question is whether the objects, a bit like Hitler's Spear of Destiny, which was imbued with a demonic entity, whether any of these objects actually have anything, and whether the objects, when placed together, form a signature code and can activate something. Many of these objects, when placed in association with each other, can create a resonance, and that can cause something to come through from the interdimensional space into our reality. So there are many possibilities. I've never seen the objects. I'm fully aware of them. And I know that the people who control them at the moment physically, but I don't know any more about that. So it's a good question. It's very hard to get research on stuff like that because it's hidden away. Many times we can only do our research because there are old photographs from the 1920s or the 1930s, and then suddenly it all disappears from public view. It's very much like the Baghdad Museum, the original battery that in the 1970s they put a drop of lemon juice into it, and they got 1.5 volts out of it. So we know that that the ancients had electricity. And then of course we had America's invasion of that country, and lo and behold, what a surprise, it and many of the other exotic elements just disappeared from the museum. So that, I don't doubt, is in some other individual multimillionaire in his own personal collection somewhere. So when we get the bloodless revolution, let's hope it's bloodless, we want these things returned, because they belong to everybody, not just a few rich people.
So back into the public museums and displays. Yeah. So, now here's another. I love these questions where people look at things from another perspective. So this is from Craig. I don't know who asked this one. How many Draco have been trying to learn from humanity in order to evolve? What about other reptilian races?
Good question. Probably the best question of the night so far. The Draco are the ones that need to evolve more than any other reptilian race. And that's why they are the focal point. There are other reptilian races, but they are all on varying degrees of their own journey, and have understood that they need to be perhaps a bit more positive. The Dracos are the ones that we talk about because they're the ones who've played such a huge role in enslaving the population on the planet, and have consistently refused to change publicly. Privately, there are just a handful of senior reptilian creatures who are working flat out privately to create an opportunity of change, because they appreciate that their days are numbered. So we're talking maybe three creatures at present who are in senior positions, who would like to change the energetic signature of the Draconis reptilian to allow it to survive. So that's my answer, three.
That's very interesting, because this reminds me of a question I asked my guides when it was in September. And I asked them that, you know, about is this the time that reptilians are going to be destroyed? And he said, no, you will see that some of them will pass through. There will be a new class. They will not be able to go back, and they will have to try very hard to fit in.
Correct. This is exactly it.
That's an interesting communication, isn't it?
Oh yeah, you absolutely got onto the right button there with that. My understanding is simply that a faction of royal reptilians are prepared, or will be prepared when the time comes, to change their whole culture in order to survive. But the vast majority of them will find it too difficult to change and would rather go down fighting or go down with a sinking ship than to change their whole history and evolve. But there are a small group who will take others with them who will offer redemption, and ultimately they will evolve, and they should be absolutely congratulated for that, because they have been on their own journey, and they will have come full circle and will, you know, hopefully take their rightful place around the debating table with a whole range of humanoid off-world entities, and will be treated as equal. And that's the point, because at the moment Draconis Reptilian don't see themselves as equal, they see themselves as superior, and that is the biggest stumbling block. So as soon as they can give that up and then say, look, we're equal, then they have a real chance. So good question, and yes, JP, I absolutely agree 100% with what you were told by your guides.
And actually, you know, it's actually quite, it's a very emotional thing. Well, I feel very emotional about it. It's you know, an entire well, you know, it's like a banishment, and you know, there's only going to be a few of them left, and they're going to be then very much alone and afraid, probably, and so very very brave of them,
yes,
and you know. Part of that, you know, that's the next level of bravery, to go into the heart, isn't it?
Yes, you're right.
They're all about, they can go through the battlefield, no problem, but to go through the heart, wham, boom.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's uncharted territory for them. That's the whole point.
The undiscovered country.
Yes.
You know, this is that. What is it? Star Trek 3, 4. Which is the story of the Klingons and the humans finally getting together and cooperating.
Yes.
And it's called The Undiscovered Country. Oh, I'm getting so emotional. Okay, so I'm gonna, meanwhile, back to Earth, we're looking at, assassinations. Okay, so this is from Craig, who hopefully isn't, maybe he's James Bond, but anyway, Craig, question for Simon Parks. Was Labour MP Michael Meacher murdered by MI5?
It's very interesting that the previous leader or head of MI5 actually publicly on BBC Radio 4 said that, I think you made a comment on this before, JP, that MI5 had never murdered anyone in its entire history. And I know that a journalist commented to me then, MI5 can't be very good, it's not doing a very good job. But publicly, MI5 say that they have never murdered anybody, which is absolute nonsense. There have been a number of members of parliament who have met some very unusual ends. There have been a number of high profile individuals, usually people who are investigating something or other, either for or against the government, who have met very unusual ends. The Americans and the British tend to favour car accidents. That's the signature, the hallmark of the security services of the United Kingdom or America, because a car crash is something that you can handle through the system. You know, you have an autopsy, or there's a coroner's inquiry, and you know, you have a debate, and you have a this, that, and the other, and it's all controlled by the system, and they know what the answer will be at the end of it anyway. So I'm not going to comment, because what I would say to you is that everybody has family, everybody has friends, and sometimes we can deeply, deeply upset members of families by making statements. All I can say to you is that more members of the Labour Party have met rather unusual ends than any other political party. So that might be of interest to you.
It's a minefield out there, and we never know who's watching whom. Now, Craig has asked a second question, which is about let's just say he was saying one person, a former European president, was involved in the kidnapping of Madeleine McCann. Now that is a big McCann of worms. Do you want to go anywhere near there? Because I mean, the whole idea of do you want to go into there?
Yeah, I won't run away from anything unless my comments could put an innocent person in danger. That's the only time I will hold back. If an innocent person's life or well-being could be put in danger by comments I make, I won't do it. But anything else, then I think that the truth deserves to be told. I did my presentation at my own Connecting Consciousness conference, and that should go online at some point, and people who watch that will see that I became quite emotional. And that shouldn't be seen as a sign of weakness. I've been showing as part of my talk, we talked about ritual sacrifice. I mentioned about babies, and I showed the album cover that the Beatles actually had, which was withdrawn, of bits of meat on their body, and then plastic dolls, babies, and dismembered, laid over them, and them in butchers' coats. And that is actually an official LP, although it was withdrawn, and you can see that if you Google it. And I talked about that, and the one thing that really gets me is the sacrificial torture and murder of children and babies through satanic lines. And there are certain children that disappear for certain purposes, and the vast majority of children that disappear are those who, sadly, you know, nobody in power is going to miss them. You know, if you're an ordinary person and your child disappears, what can you do? You write to the police, you write to your member of parliament or your lawmaker, and they do absolutely nothing. So we don't really see elite people losing their children. What we see is elite people selling or pledging their children to certain organizations as a proof that the organization is greater than anything else. And so what we often find is that elite children are placed with orphans, and then those orphan children are murdered in front of the elite children, and that trauma that it causes is then used, what I call phase two, which is the mind control, the programming of that elite child. Because when that elite child grows up and becomes an elite person, therefore the organization will control them through that mind control program caused through that murder. And if anybody's in any doubt, they shouldn't be. And because I absolutely categorically know that they do that, and they've done it for a very long time. So when we talk about situations with like that, then it becomes quite an important point, because that is how many people are controlled. You know, there are plenty of people in elite positions who would walk out tomorrow. You know, we shouldn't just think they're all rubbing their hands and enjoying it. They're not. The vast majority of them are not. And again, on my Connecting Consciousness, I beg your pardon, the talk I did at Watford, I did a talk a week prior, and then the Connecting Consciousness, I actually made an appeal, because I know that every show that I do, every conference that I make, is listened into by these elite. In fact, I did the Watford conference, and the Daily Express hid a journalist into the conference, didn't announce himself to the organisers. I was one of three speakers, and lo and behold, who was the speaker? They attacked me. So the Daily Express, British major newspaper, attacked me and left the other two speakers out of it. Well, that's fine. I'll take it on the chin. I really don't care. So the ultimate thing is that we have a situation where there are certain things that have to be changed, and, you know, the using of children to control their parents is the big thing that's got to stop.
Wow, thank you. And that's such a important question. Okay, there we go. Question for Simon. Can you tell us about some of the more memorable experiences as a mantid master, such as negotiations or travels? The adventures of the mantid master. get the sitar out. Okay.
See, you see, this is the point, isn't it? It's about not being so sucked into it that one can't sort of step back and just look at life and think, you know, yeah, this is really different, and we can afford to have a laugh and a joke, because otherwise we become too serious and too worthy. And then life just becomes unbearable. So, yeah, I've always said that the top group of mantids who refer to themselves as masters means they haven't evolved enough. Because if you want to take the label, I'm a master, that means that you are basically saying, I'm better than you. So they are fourth dimensional. When they get to fifth dimensional, then I think they'll drop that title. I've said on a number of occasions that it is possible to take the energy soul out of a person and place them into another body for a short period of time. And it was a bit of an exchange, really. I went into one of their bodies and was involved in a number of operations. I don't mean medical operations, I mean technical operations. One of them I will recount to you, and I'll take a couple of minutes, because perhaps it's interesting. It's an underground base in this planet, and my memory starts with two reptilians on the door. I walk in. The door is a metal door. It slides open. It's really thick, and there are six scientists, human scientists, all around the edge of this all rough-hewn rock. It's not smoothly polished, it's very rough. It's like one of those boring machines has gone through, but it's not made a very smooth job on it. And each scientist is standing at a table and has six hybrids. So these are human, alien creatures. Six to each table. Each table has a scientist, and they're actually having a lesson how to work a coffee percolator. So they are being got ready to integrate into an elite family, usually a military family, who will protect them. And they are being taught how to use, in this instance, it was coffee grinding. I mean, the day before it might have been how to use money or something like that. In the centre of the room was a white circle, and the word school painted on one side and school on the other. And inside this circle were young hybrid babies, perhaps between 6 months old and 18 months old. They were crawling, couldn't yet walk. There was a mantid in the purple robe, what you would call the master, and there were mantid doctors. So those who've listened to my shows, myself and on here with you, know that the mantids are divided into groups, and one speciality is the doctor service. If you ever need an operation, for goodness sake, don't go to a grey, go to a mantis. And they were being taught, these babies were being taught to control a bouncing ball with their mind. So the mantid was dropping the ball, it was bouncing on the floor, and the babies were being encouraged to take control of the ball as it bounced, to make it bounce more or to change its direction. So that was very interesting because I was overseeing that, and I remember walking around and a scientist, as regularly occurs, particularly at Pine Gap actually, had a nervous breakdown there and then. And the first thing I was aware of was him shouting at his group of hybrids, get away from it, get away from it, don't touch it, don't touch it, why don't you listen to me? And then the hybrids, psychically or telepathically calling out for help, saying, we fear for our bodies. Because, you know, they are evolved. They know that their soul can't die, but their human body, their human-like bodies can be damaged. So they were psychically calling out, we fear for our bodies. And I've never seen two reptilians run as fast in my life. And I can remember they take huge strides and their feet, and they were slapping the stone floor, and it was boom, 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 boom as they rushed. And literally they got hold of this guy and they would have absolutely torn his head off his shoulders. And I remember getting in and defusing the situation, and that was one experience. So hybrids are and have been taught and trained how to survive in our environment. So I hope that's of interest.
Well, I mean, particularly the reaction of this guy. What was he complaining about? Were they just not kind of getting the particular vector that he was trying to put across?
No, they were children, and they were interested and curious, and they were massively high IQ, and I don't think he was giving them the information quickly enough. They were wanting to touch the coffee percolator, and he was saying basically, don't touch it until I tell you you can touch it, or, you know, this is the nozzle that the coffee comes out of. But they were touching the nozzle before he said, this is the nozzle. So it was purely a control thing. They were wanting to take it apart and see how it works. And they wanted him, they were ahead of him basically. And so it wasn't that he got angry. It was just the final straw. And you see this a lot when people who are scientists and have been taught A is A and B is B suddenly are moved from their mundane research programs and placed into an elite program because they are very brilliant scientists, suddenly find that they are having to deal with aliens, which they have always joked about and laughed about and poked fun at, suddenly find that they can't talk to anybody because they'll be murdered, and they have no choice but to carry on with a project working with aliens. And so many of them have nervous breakdowns and then have to be pensioned out of the service. And in his case, he just had a nervous breakdown. He just couldn't cope with it anymore. And the final straw was the fact that they were touching this coffee percolator, and he hadn't said you can touch it yet. And the problem is, you see, that it is an offence. It's a death, an offence by death for a human to lay a hand on a hybrid, because hybrids are seen as very, very important to the elite. So if a scientist puts a hand on it, then they're in real trouble. The good news is that this scientist didn't die, and literally saw the doctor and then was given a mind wipe, and then sent home on a 6-month sabbatical and then put back into his ordinary academic program. That's what happens.
Wow. Okay. Now, here's a question for Simon Parks. On the last Connecting Consciousness, you said that your daddy, or that daddy, not your daddy, but your daddy, was a tall white, when you said that always he was a reptilian. And then you said a psychic medium called you as an intermediate to negotiate with Anu, that you say is your daddy, who was in the room next to you at the time she called. So now your daddy can't talk to you directly? Please clear it up.
It's a really good question. Yeah. He can talk to me directly, but he chose not to. He chose to go through an intermediary, because I believe he wished to manipulate the intermediary and try to use the intermediary to put pressure on me to force me to make a decision that otherwise I wouldn't make. So if, for instance, I'm, as I am, always on my guard with him, then I think the plan or the hope was that if I was dealing with a very human person, very gifted and very psychic, but nevertheless a very human person, who appeared to take the same stance as him, then might I be more inclined to agree with the human person than I would with the reptilian dad? Although the agenda would be the same, one would be coming, appear to be coming from a very human person, and one would obviously be from a reptilian person. So I believed that in his case he was involving a psychic medium as a tool to try to get me to lower my guard. And I basically sent a message, what I call up the pipe, and I said to him, you know, you want to talk to me, then you do so as you always done on a one-to-one basis. Please don't involve other people who have no part in this. You shouldn't involve them. It's not fair on them. You know, you could cause them quite a lot of aggravation, and don't play games like that. And you want to deal with me, then you deal with me as you always have done. And he's very angry at the moment. But, you know, that is what he is, and that's, you know, he's got to get over it. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Maybe he could do one of Chris Thomas's giveaways with a very, very large piece of paper and an enormous crayon. I know that's being a bit irreverent, but, you know.
No, I think he would need a forest the size of the Amazon.
Bless his heart, and quite a while.
But, seriously, you know, in all joking apart, he's got to make that decision. He's got to change, because if he doesn't, he's consigning not only himself but all his people to something, that a fate that is worse than death. And it's his gift. It's within his power to make that choice, to make that change. And, you know, and I want him to, because ultimately, as much as we malign the reptilians and as much as they are hated and vilified, they were still created by Source. They do contain a divine soul. They were created by Source just as we were. They're not programmed life forms. They're not robots. So, you know, that is why they've been given so much free will. And ultimately, they have the power in their own hands to shape a future that's better for them and better for humanity. And if they don't, they are going to get left behind. So, you know, he's got to do something. But trying to trick or play games with me isn't the right way. It's not going to work. And we can just develop this now, because he has told the ruling families they're on their own. And I wanted to say that 92-95% of all chemtrailing over the planet has now stopped. It's not entirely stopped, but the crisscrossing networking type of chemtrails has stopped, because the black budget has been turned off for it, because this reptile, which many people call Anu and I just call Dad, has basically turned round and is no longer giving direction. And he said, basically, you're on your own, I'm not interested, I've got my own battles to fight, get on with it. There are changes afoot which we can't stop. And there's a terminology called the parents. I know other names for them. These are somewhat 75% alien, 25% human, thereabouts. And these are people who ultimately have control of the black budgets of the world. And they sign their signature once every 3 months or 6 months on some on a 12-month basis to ongoing black projects. And the signature has not been indented for the continuation of chemtrailing, and so people throughout the world should notice that chemtrailing has reduced dramatically. Now, this is predominantly because CERN did not operate, a portal was not created, the creature I refer to as Dad has not been able to leave the planet, and he's trapped here now for good, unless something on a negotiated level comes out, and he realizes that the elite are finished, so he's distanced himself from them, which is a very good move, and I'm very proud of him for doing that, although he may have his own agenda for doing that. The reality is it weakens the elite, and the elite now are imploding in on themselves. So there's been a knock-on effect, and so basically if creatures can evolve and change, then hallelujah.
Indeed. Hallelujah. So, CERN. That was another thing that my guide said, is that, you know, maybe this was about 2010, they said that it would open a little bit, but that some unusual options will happen after that. That it's, you know, what it's not what they expect it's going to be. Can you talk a little bit? I know you've been talking. Hey, Simon, you're famous in Britain now. You've been on the telly. No, you've been in the papers and said that you stopped CERN. That's what they said.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us the backstory?
Yeah, I didn't stop it. I stopped it with the help of a vast group of people who are good, honest, spiritual and psychic, and weren't prepared to sit in their armchair any longer and just moan. You know, we have a culture, don't we, of we sit in our armchair and we say how bad things are, but we don't actually often get off that armchair and do something about it. And it had come to the point where we had to demonstrate to the planet, to Mother Nature, to Divine Source, that humans were actually worth the worry. You can't keep on expecting your big brother to come and get you out of trouble. Sometimes, you know, you have to actually stand up and say, I'm going to do something positive. And so what happened was that a group of people joined with me on a meditation, and the facts are out there, you know, it's all there to be read. And I, on my conference that we did locally in Whitby in North Yorkshire, we got the 90 odd people to attend, which is fantastic. I showed screenshots, official screenshots from the publicity department of the CERN to show that exactly at a certain time, 4 o'clock in the morning, the device stopped working. And then they rebooted it and got it finally working for 12 o'clock noon. It went up to lunchtime when we had our meditation, and 6 minutes after our meditation finished, the device failed again. They rebooted it, it failed again. What people don't know, because they're not going to tell you, but I've got, again, I showed screenshots from a weather satellite that at the time of our meditation, a precipitous thunderstorm occurred over CERN. There was a lightning strike which took out the main generator. CERN at full power uses 7% of the total electricity potential generation of France. 7%! That's a massive amount of power. It needs a huge generator. And there was a lightning strike, it took it out. Now they have a backup generator which is in Switzerland. But that only provides up to 30% of the power, and that's why they could only punch a hole 0.8 millimeters wide into the fourth dimension. Their object was to create a huge portal to bring in reinforcements for the bad guys. They didn't, but they have created a 0.8 millimeter hole. They have communications now. They have comms between the third and the fourth dimension. And the big thing I was trying to make here was that, look, you know, even people who are spiritual fail to really appreciate that when you think about something, you can actually affect material matter. So people who have gifts, spiritual gifts, psychic gifts, can actually impact and affect things made of metal. And we can create our own reality. That's what makes human beings so fantastic, so special, so beautiful. The fact that you can change outcomes. So with CERN non-operational, oh yes, I know you're going to read lots of stuff on the internet, oh, they've got it going, oh, it's at full power. It doesn't matter, because there was a very important confluence of planets at the time they wished to make that happen, and I was made aware of that. They'll never again have that opportunity. So the CERN is, for all intents and purposes, it's not going to achieve what they want now. And because of that, the creature that I call Dad, some people call Anu, turned around to the elite, particularly in the Vatican, and said, you are on your own, boys. I've got some big serious issues. And that's why the Pope, as a fallback plan, went to America, made his speech, and that's the New World Order. You know, the Pope didn't go to the United Nations and talk about world matters, which he should have done. He went to America And I say it again, the Pope doesn't speak for the Hindus, the Muslims, the Jews. He only speaks for one arm of the Christian faith. Yet there he was in America, unrolling a global plan, because he is the front of the New World Order. And let's not forget that this is the Pope that last year said he would baptize aliens. So I don't believe we'll get necessarily a false flag alien invasion, but I do believe there's a strong possibility of a false flag alien landing, where they meet the Pope, and the Pope makes an agreement on behalf of all of humans with the alien race. So I do think that there are some very big things to play out in the next 6 months. So yes, CERN was a huge point, not least because it demonstrates to people that it is worth getting off your armchair. If you passionately believe in freedom, you passionately believe in the right of humanity to have its own path, then for heaven's sake, please do something positive about it. Nobody died. Some people got hurt. A number of people who participated have suffered consequences of that. But each person knew what they were doing, and they accepted those consequences because they believed that the end justified the means. So I'm sorry for a long answer there, JP, but it was important.
Very good. Very good answer. Thank you very much, Simon. I mean, because it's a very current thing. Okay. Right, here we go. This is very interesting. Okay, so Sonia from Vienna. Question for Simon. Being trapped in the white light, who determines all the details and circumstances of one's incarnation? Or do we just incarnate randomly? Thank you.
What a lovely question. That's really good. That's another really, really good question. Two forces at work. Divine source. You should always just be left to divine source. It's actually an offence. It's illegal to manipulate or play around with souls and put them into different bodies. But because nobody's intended to die, it's not a criminal offence. Therefore, free will, the alien races are allowed to do that. But it's technically wrong. In most cases, source decides in conjunction with the soul where that soul is going to incarnate. And anybody who's had a soul reading with me knows that if your energy soul, when it is created by source, if you decide that your first port of call is here and you immediately come here and you incarnate in a human body, you are an earth human, which is fine. Except, of course, you don't have any previous experience, you've no framework, and that's why these people are unawake. Because, not because they're stupid, but because they are naive. And when elite governments tell them things, they believe it because they can't think that anyone would lie to them. But if you come here via another star system or another dimension, you arrive on this planet in a physical body with a deep genetic knowledge or an Akashic knowledge or a history that you remember. So when people in elite governments tell you stuff, you think, well, that's not right. So basically we have a situation where we are created by source, and we can either be manipulated by advanced technology and advanced minds into incarnating in set bodies that they choose, or divine source puts us into it. Now, one of the interesting things is what we would call a walk-in. You see, what many people don't realize is that the human race, country to country, is scanned on a regular basis. So every baby that's born is mapped, nothing to do with the paperwork, nothing to do with the computer. It is psychically scanned to detect which soul has arrived in that baby's body and whether it's a threat to the elite government of that particular country, and then all that information is coordinated and sent to America. So when a person declares or is aware that as a 6-month-old baby their soul changes, or they have a near-death experience at the age of 50 and a new soul comes in, it is done to try to throw these people off the track. Because once the human race has been scanned and, oh yes, you're just another reptilian soul, fine, that's not an issue. But then 6 months later, that soul agrees to leave the body, and say a Palladian soul or a Lyran soul comes into that body, that will not be detected until that whole batch is swept again, at which point that baby hopefully has grown up to an adult and can defend itself better. So it's a massive game of chess that goes on between source and aliens that are beneficial to humanity, and then those aliens that are not. So it's a good question.
Very, very good question. Thank you. Okay. Right, so here is a worried Laura K. Clayton. I'm worried that by punching more holes into the grid, we are creating more opportunities for the fourth dimension to interrupt and disturb further our humanity's evolution. Is this true? Please give us suggestions and tools and assurances of how best to deal with such interruptions and threats. Confidence may not be enough.
Well, the network didn't stop the Roswell space crash, did it? It didn't stop many of those. You have to understand that the net is not operated by beings who like humanity. The net is created by beings who don't like humanity and wish to maintain the control. So they can alter the frequency of that net to let through what they want. So you can come from outside to inside, but you can't easily go from inside to outside. Otherwise, we wouldn't get any alien spacecraft coming into our atmosphere because they wouldn't get through the net. What I refer to as blockade runners. A blockade runner, in my parlance, is a good guy who has the technology, with a little bit of luck, who wants to break through the net to come onto Earth, do some good, and then get the heck out of here quickly, and may or may not be successful. So the net has never prevented the bad guys from interacting on this planet. The net has only prevented the good guys from doing the work they need to do. So we shouldn't be fearful about punching holes in the net. The net is not created by source. Okay? If something is not divinely created, it has the ability to be both good and evil. If it was created by divine source, it would just be good. So it's created by something else which has chosen it to be of an evil device. Therefore, we need to get rid of it. We need to get rid of it as quickly as possible. Thank you, JP.
Okay, brilliant. So how does it work? Sorry, this is from... Sorry, I can always just laugh at it. Spirit Bunny, back to our cuddly version, the cuddly creatures. Spirit Bunny, how does it work for a dimensional being to fully materialize into a lower dimension than their usual? As in, do they need to make consideration for things that are solid in that lower dimension? I know it's difficult. I'm curious about the mechanics of this.
Yeah. Oh, that's a damn good question. Exactly right. It's not so difficult for a fourth dimensional creature to come into the third dimension, because it's only the concept of time and space that's different. It's very easy for them to do so. Remember, at 3 o'clock British time, 3 o'clock in the morning, the veil, the thickness between the third and the fourth dimension is at its thinnest. And also, of course, Halloween. It is one of the closest times to the fourth dimension. Now, as you go up the ladder, and you become sort of seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth dimension, it becomes incredibly difficult, because your whole frequency is just not in keeping with what you have. And if you think about how humans initially came to this planet, when a alien spacecraft, which is actually humanoid, in the 12th dimension crashed on this planet, and of the, I don't know, 2,000 crew, maybe only a couple of hundred survived. The reason that so few survived wasn't because of the crash, is that when the doors opened and they were faced with a third dimensional world, and they had existed in a 12th dimensional world, they just went into shock and died, and only 200 survived. So it's incredibly difficult for energy beings to come here, and that's why genuine experiences say they saw an energy being, because the being stayed in this energy form, because if it took a physical form, it would then have to become part of our reality, and there could be some serious consequences to the life of that being. So they tend to stay in that energy format. But if you're third, fourth, fifth, or possibly sixth dimensional, you can become a physical form on this planet and get by. So again, I hope that answers the question.
All right. That also adds a clue to, You know, you got lots of these ancient stories about men who marry mermaids, and the mermaid has to give up her way to become a person. Is that something like that? That the mermaid is actually like a fourth dimensional person and has to shift dimensions to come into our world and has to stay here, you know, and breed and stuff.
I think a better point would be Lord of the Rings, where one of the elf princesses has to give up her eternal life to marry Aragorn, who becomes the king, and she decides that she doesn't want to see him die, because she doesn't die, she goes on forever and ever and ever, and therefore she wants to take mortality so that when he dies she will die. And we see this story coming through time and time again from folklore, where something rather special has sold its birthright or given it up because it wished to embrace something on the earth. And I do believe that there is a lot of truth in that. There are creatures who, remember, some of these creatures have a lifespan of 2,000 years and then can clone themselves. So, you know, since the time of what we call the biblical Jesus, that is just one lifetime for a reptilian, who then goes into the cloning chamber and then does whatever. So to them it's nothing. But if you become part of the earth and you become so connected that you can't bear to be away from somebody or something, or you get heartily sick of living forever and you just want to end it, then these are what these stories I think are based on reality, but a long time ago.
Beautiful. So, this is from... go ahead.
Got time for one more, have we, JP?
Oh gosh, we're right at the end of the yeah. show. I think
we get one more in, eh?
Yeah. All right. Here's one. All right. Hi, Simon. What do you think about marijuana and alcohol? Do ETs smoke or drink? There you go. do we party? Can we expect some Romulan ale?
Well, look, that's a lovely question to end on, isn't it? I have never seen an off-world entity smoke. I have seen them drink, but I haven't seen them drink alcohol. The mantids, I've never seen a mantid eat. I've seen them drink fluid through a metal-type straw. In fact, most of the nutrient many of these entities get is from a fluid-based, not an organic-based substance. No, I've never seen them. But the concept of what we would call drugs... That's the reptilians have their drug, which is, as you know, a pheromone, which is released by humans when humans are terrified and angry. They release, terrified and scared, I should say, they release a pheromone, which is a drug to the reptilians. That's why reptilians torture children in particular. That's why, I've talked about it before, that's why cats are always seen as cruel, because they played with their prey. They never seem to kill their prey, but you see a cat has a lot of reptilian in it, and so it's doing the same thing. It terrorizes a mouse. The mouse is a mammal, releases pheromones, the cat smells that, and it's a drug. So reptilians have a drug, which we've talked about there. Other rather nicer entities don't have drugs, but they have a special feeling for music, but a frequency. It's not music as such, it's just a frequency, a sound, which puts them into a state of bliss or a state of well-being. And that, again, is a sort of something like that. So, but no smoking, now that's something yet which perhaps we have to introduce. I'm sure when humans join the Great Galactic Federation, that will be something that they try to introduce, just like Sir Walter Raleigh introduced tobacco and potatoes.
Yeah, pass the Andromedans a bowl, eh? Anyway, so Simon Parks, this is a great question to finish on. This has been Connecting Consciousness, and I'll see you at the end of it's now the beginning of November. Yes, indeed. So we're beginning with December.
Wow. Yes, it's delightful as always, JP. I've got the highest respect for you, and the quality of the questions just goes up and up and up. And everybody who's written a question, whether it's got through to me or not, should be damn proud of yourselves.
Yeah.
because you have shown so much knowledge and understanding. I'm just really grateful, JP, that you've put this together. You give people the chance to connect. And it's just, it impresses me that there are so many good people out there. So listen, God bless, and thanks ever so much.